Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to A Norm at Night. Here we are on the 10th of January, and we're going to have a Black History Night. We're going to do some readings. If you're out there listening and you have something from a Black author, or you are a Black author and have something of your own that you'd like to read, by all means, go ahead. I am going to start things off with a selection from Eldridge Cleaver's wonderful book called Soul on Ice. It was written in 1965, a time when America was at war, much like America is at war now. In 1965, we were at war in Vietnam. Now we're at war in Iraq and in Afghanistan. They were terrible times for Americans. Eldridge Cleaver was 15 in 1965. Excuse me. And Eldridge Cleaver and the whole movement for the liberation of the human spirit that some people, and I happen to be one of them, believe the whole civil rights movement pointed out, something that went way beyond the color of skin, in which, to be perfectly honest, I'm afraid that, I don't know, that it's disappeared. But anyway, our first reading for the night. And please, feel free to call in. Remember, our number is 347-945-6713. But a reading from Soul on Ice. It's called Soul on Ice, Folsom Prison, October 9th, 1965. I'm perfectly aware that I'm in prison, that I'm a Negro, that I've been a rapist, that I have a higher undereducation. I never know what significance I'm supposed to attach to these factors, but I have a suspicion that because of these aspects of my character, free, normal, educated people rather expect me to be more reserved, penitent, remorseful, and not too quick to shoot off my mouth on certain subjects. But I let them down, disappoint them, make them gape at me in a sort of stupor as if they're thinking, "You've got your nerve. Don't you realize you owe a debt to society?" My answer to all such thoughts lurking in their split-level heads, crouching behind their squinting bombardier eyes, is that the blood of Vietnamese peasants has paid all my debts, that the Vietnamese people, afflicted with a rampant disease called the Yankees, through their suffering, as opposed to the frustration of fat-assed American geeks safe at home worrying over whether to have bacon, ham, or sausage with their grade-A eggs in the morning, while Vietnamese worry each morning whether the Yankees will gas them, burn them up, or blow away their humble pads in a hail of bombs, have canceled all my IOUs. In beginning this letter, I could just as easily have mentioned other aspects of my situation. I could have said I'm perfectly aware that I'm tall, that I'm skinny, that I need a shave, that I'm hard up enough to suck my grandmother's old withered tip, and that I would rather dig deeper than deeply, getting clean once more, not only in the steam bath sense, but in getting sharp as an Esquire square with a Harlem touch, or that I would like to put on a pair of bib overalls and become a snicker, or that I'd like to leap the whole last mile and grow a beard and don whatever threads the local nationalism might require and comrade with Che Guevara and share his fate, blazing a new Pathfinder's trail through the stymied upbeat brain of a new left. Or how I'd just love to be in Berkeley right now, to roll in the mud, frolic in that sky of funky revolution, to breathe in its heady fumes and look with roving eyes for a new John Brown, Eugene Debs, a blacker, meaner, keener Malcolm X, a Robert Franklin Williams with less rabid in his hot blood, an American Lenin, Fidel, a Mau Mau, 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 all of which is true. But what matters is that I've fallen in love with my lawyer. Is that surprising? A convict is expected to have a high regard for anyone who comes to his aid, who tries to help him, and who expends time, energy, and money in an effort to have him set free. But can a convict really love a lawyer? It goes against the grain. Convicts hate lawyers. To walk around a prison yard and speak well of a lawyer is to raise the downcast eyebrows of felons who've been bitten by members of the bar and grill. Convicts are convinced that lawyers must have a secret little black book which no one else is ever allowed to see, a book that schools lawyers in an esoteric morality in which the highest good is treachery and crossing one's dumb and trusting client the noblest of deeds. It was learned by the convicts that I'd gotten busted with some magazines given to me by my lawyer, and that I was thrown in a hole for it. Convicts smiled knowingly and told me that I'd gone for the greasy pig that my lawyer had set me up, and that I couldn't see through the plot. I was so stupid that I would buy not only the Golden Gate Bridge, but some fried ice cream. It was my turn to smile knowingly. A convict's paranoia is as thick as the prison wall and just as necessary. Why should we have faith in anyone, even our wives and lovers, whose beds we've shared and whom we've shared the tenderest moments and most delicate relations, leave us after a while, put us down, cut us clean and loose, and treat us like they hate us, won't even write us a letter, send us a Christmas card every other year or a quarter for a pack of cigarettes or a tube of toothpaste now and then. All society shows the convict its ass and expects him to kiss it. The convict feels like kicking it or putting a bullet in it. A convict sees man's fangs and claws and learns quickly to bear and unsheath his own for real and final. To maintain a hold on the ideas and sentiments of civilization in such circumstances is probably impossible. How much more incredible is it then, while rooted in this pit, to fall in love and with a lawyer? Use a lawyer, yes. Use anybody. Even tell the lawyer that you're in love. But you will always know that when you are lying, and even if you massage to the fool, the lawyer, you could never manage to fool yourself. Why does it make you feel sad to see how everything hangs by such thin and whimsical threads? Because you're a dreamer, an incredible dreamer, with a tiny spark hidden somewhere inside you which cannot die, which even you cannot kill or quench, and which tortures you horribly because all the odds are against its continual burning. In the midst of the foulest decay and putrid savagery, this spark speaks to you of beauty, of human warmth and kindness, of goodness, of greatness, of heroism, of martyrdom, and it speaks to you of love. So I love my lawyer. My lawyer is not an ordinary person. My lawyer is a rebel, a revolutionary, who is alienated fundamentally from the status quo, probably with as great an intensity, conviction, and irretrievability as I am alienated from it, and probably with more intelligence, compassion, and humanity. If you read the papers, you are no doubt aware of my lawyer's incessant involvement in agitation against all manifestations of the monstrous evil of our system, such as our intervention in the internal affairs of the Vietnamese people or the invasion of the Dominican Republic by U.S. Marines. And my lawyer defends civil rights demonstrators, sit-inners, and the free speech students who rebelled against the Kerr's strong machine at the University of California. My love for my lawyer is due in part to these activities and involvements because we are always on the same side of the issues. And I love all my allies, but this, which may be the beginning of an explanation, does not nearly explain what goes on between my lawyer and me. I suppose that I should be honest and, before going any further, admit that my lawyer is a woman, or maybe I should have held back with that piece of the puzzle, a very excellent and unusual and beautiful woman. I know that she believes that I do not really love her and that I'm confusing a combination of lust and gratitude for love. Lust and gratitude I feel abundantly, but I also love this woman. And I fear that, believing what I do, not love her at all, she will act according to that belief. Hold on one second. I'm sorry, I lost my screen because my screensaver went on. I'll continue now with the reading from Eldridge Cleaver's Soul on Earth. So I apologize for the interruption. If you want to call in, it's 347-945-6713. But to continue with Eldridge Cleaver's letter from Folsom Prison. At night, I talk with her in my sleep. Long dialogues in which she answers back. We alternate in speaking like in the script of a play. And let me say that I don't believe a word she says. While we're talking, I participate and believe everything, taking her word as her bond. But when I'm awake, I repudiate the conversation and disbelieve her. I awake refreshed, and though my sleep has been restless, I am not tired. Except for a few lost hours in which she slips away and I fall into a deep sleep, I hover on the level between consciousness and peace, and the dialogue ensues. It does not bother me now. I have often gone through this when something seizes my mind. I place a great deal of emphasis on people really listening to each other, to what the other person has to say, because you very seldom encounter a person who is capable of taking either you or himself seriously. Of course, when I was out of prison, I was not really like this. The seeds were there, but there was too much confusion and madness mixed in. I had a profound desire for communicating with and getting to know other people, but I was incapable of doing so. I didn't know how. Getting to know someone, entering that new world, is an ultimate, irretrievable leap into the unknown. The prospect is terrifying. The stakes are high. The emotions are overwhelming. The two people are reluctant, really, to strip themselves naked in front of each other, because in so doing, they make themselves vulnerable and give enormous power over themselves one to the other. How often they inflict pain and torment upon each other. Better to maintain shallow, superficial affairs. That way the scars are not too deep. No blood is hacked from the soul. But I do not believe a beautiful relationship has to end always in carnage, or that we have to be fraudulent. Fraudulent and pretentious with one another. If we project fraudulent, pretentious images, or if we fantasize each other into distorted caricatures of what we really are, then we awake from the trance and see beyond the sham and front. All will dissolve, all will die, or be transformed into bitterness and hate. I know that sometimes people fake on each other out of genuine motives to hold on to the object of their tenderest feelings. They see themselves as so inadequate that they feel forced to wear a mask in order to continually impress the second party. If a man is free, not in prison, the army, a monastery, hospital, spaceship, submarine, and living a normal life with the usual multiplicity of social relations with individuals of both sexes, it may be that he is capable of experiencing the total impact of another individual upon himself, the competing influence and convicting forces of other personalities may dilute one's psyche and emotional perception to the extent that one does not and cannot receive all that the other person is capable of sending. Yet I may believe that a man whose soul or emotional apparatus has lain dormant in a deadening limbo of destitute is capable of responding from some great sunken well of his being as though a potent catalyst has been tossed into a critical mass when an exciting, lovely, and lovable woman enters the range of his feelings. What a deep, slow, torturous, reluctant, frightened stirring. He feels a certain part of himself in a state of flux, as if a bloodless stranger has stolen inside his body, startling him by doing calisthenics, and he feels himself coming slowly back to life. His body chemistry changes, and he is flushed with a new strength. When she first comes to him, his heart is empty, a desolate place, a dehydrated oasis, unsolaced. And he's crawling woman food, and he's craving woman food, without which sustenance the tension of his manhood is unwound and relaxed. He has imperative need for the kindness, sympathy, understanding, and conversation of a woman. To hear a woman's laughter at his words, to answer her questions and be answered by her, to look into her eyes, to sniff her primal fragrance, to hear with slaughtered ears the sensuous rustling of frivolous garments, his legs are crossed and uncrossed beneath the table, to feel the delicate, shy weight of her hand in his. How painfully and totally aware is he of her presence, her every movement. It is as if one has been left to die beneath a bush on a lonely trail. The sun is hot, and the shade of the bush is not offering an extension of life, offers at least a slowing down of death. And just when one feels the next breath will surely be the last, a rare and rainbow-colored bird settles on a delicate twig of the bush, and with the magic of melodious trillings and beauty of plumage, charms the dying one back to life. The dying man feels the strength flowing in and through the conduits of his body from the charged atmosphere created by the presence of the bird, and he knows intuitively and is clinging to life that if the bird remains, he will regain his strength and health and live. Seeing her image slipping away from the weak fingers of his mind as soon as she is gone, his mind fights for a token of her on which to peg memory. Jealously, he hoards the feeling, memory of their encounter, like a miser gloating over a folio of blue-chip stock. The unfathomable machinery of the subconscious projects an image onto the conscious mind, her bare right arm, from curve of shoulder to fingertip. Had his lips quivered with desire to brand that soft, cool-looking flesh with a kiss of fire, had his fingers itched to caress. Such is the magic of a woman, the female principle of nature which she embodies, and her power to resurrect and revitalize a long, isolated, and lonely man. I was 22 when I came to prison, and of course I have changed tremendously over the years, but I've always had a strong sense of myself, and in the last few years I felt I was losing my identity. There was a deadness in my body that eluded me as though I could not exactly locate its site. I would be aware of this numbness, this feeling of atrophy, and it haunted the back of my mind. Because of this numb spot, I felt peculiarly off balance, the awareness of something missing, of a blank spot, a certain imitation of emptiness. Now I know what it was. After 8 years in prison, I was visited by a woman who was interested in my work and cared about what was happening to me. And since encountering her, I feel life, strength flowing back into that spot. My step, the tread of my stride, which was becoming tentative and uncertain, has begun to recover a definiteness, a confidence, a boldness, which makes me want to kick over a few tables. I may even swagger a little, and as I read in a book somewhere, push myself forward like a train. That was a letter from Eldridge Cleaver, written Folsom Prison in October of 1965. Absolutely incredible. That was something that moved me a great deal. So what did you think of it? Give us a call, 347-945-6713, if you're listening out there. If you have something you'd want to read, by all means, call up. Something you've written, somebody else has written, and you can join our Black History reading here on Norm at Night. I really enjoy doing that. I got about a half hour to go. So my regulars, if you're out there, give me a call, 347-945-6713. I got a call coming in. Hold on. Go ahead, 218. You're with Norm at Night.
Hey, Mr. Constantine.
Hey, how are you?
Good, how are you?
What can I do for you tonight?
Well, I enjoyed the quote by the lawyer and the convict.
Well, that convict was Eldridge Cleaver.
Okay. That was a nice quote. And, you know, my dog did well.
Oh, at the dog show. How
yeah.
are you? I'm glad to hear that. Were you there with the dog? Are you at the dog show now?
No, it's in New York, Madison, whatever. I don't remember.
Oh, so you don't show the dog?
Oh, no, we have someone hired to do that. Yeah, it's like
oh.
professional.
Yeah. So someone hired. Oh, I forgot who I'm dealing with.
Yeah.
It must be a Republican I have here on the line.
Yeah, and I wanted to bring kind of a gray area up.
Go ahead.
What do you think of Imus? You know, how he was kicked off of, I think, wasn't it MSNBC?
What I think of Imus and why he was, well, first of all, you have to understand something. I didn't like the Imus show.
Okay.
And so I personally think that Don Imus is a pompous ass.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do I think he should have been kicked off the air for what he did? If I'm running the news show, I don't kick him off the air. But he didn't really have very good ratings anyway. But what he said, what he did, you know, it's really very interesting. And I don't think Eldridge Cleaver would have kicked him off the air, but that's a whole... I mean, that's just my viewpoint. I thought what he did was, stupid for a starter. And when you become public figures and essentially big-time college athletes become public figures, you have to take the good with the bad, in my view. Now, how would I have felt if he'd said those things about my daughter? I don't think I'd have felt very good, to be perfectly honest. Don Imus is... But I'll tell you one thing that I am glad about with Don Imus.
Okay.
He was replaced by Joe Scarborough.
Oh, yeah. I don't like Morning Joe.
You don't like? I can't believe you don't like Morning Joe. He's
I never
one of
really
your guys.
Sat down and, I know.
He's one of your guys. I mean, I can see your face and his face when he talks. Oh, and
yeah.
By the way, have you guys figured out yet how you're going to steal the election from Al Franken?
Oh, they're bringing it to court because stealing
yeah,
it.
I know. After you Republicans got a president by going to court, you might as well get a couple of senators, too.
Well, here's the thing, because they counted votes like, what is it called, like an absentee ballot? What? I can't even talk today. No, they counted like the
votes
from
the
hospital.
You guys in Minnesota, I mean, you'll find some way to keep Franken out of the Senate. If I can count, I mean, how you put Jesse Van Buren. Well, I can't even think of his last name, though. Jesse, your wrestler governor.
Don't remember.
Why can't I think of his last name? The wrestler was Governor Minnesota.
Yeah.
Jesse. Help me here. Somebody out there, call in. I want to say Jesse Van Buren, but that's not it.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody give us a call, 347-945-6713, and join this young guy and I trashing. Oh, I love Morning Joe. I got to tell you, Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski may be the best pair ever to hit the radio.
I don't know.
No?
Yeah.
No, they're like a bridge you build out of toothpicks.
Oh, that was...
You just see how much weight they can carry.
Yeah. I was, like, raised on Imus. You know, I was watching Imus every morning since
really?
I was a young lad in Springfield, Illinois. Yeah.
Oh, Don Imus is not one of my favorite people. I have to admit. Oh, wait, I got to just hold on. Don't go anywhere. Go ahead, 602. You're on with Norm.
Hello, Norm.
Yeah,
Alan,
you got me.
Alan Sarvinus, how are you?
Whoa, how are you?
I'm fine. I heard you got a show. It's Black History Reading.
You're on it now. We're live on the Internet.
Really? So what reading did you do?
I read from Eldridge Cleaver's Soul on Ice.
Really? That was fabulous.
You like that, huh?
Yes, I'm loving it.
That's a great book. So how are you these days?
He was in the Black Panthers, right?
He was an original, yeah.
What'd you
Eldridge
say?
Eldridge Cleaver, yes, he was. Eldridge Cleaver, Stokely Carmichael, Tupac Shakur's mother.
Oh.
There were 12 originals. I can't remember. A-Trap Brown. But anyway.
Yeah, I just came down and heard you. I moved to Maine and now I'm back.
You moved to Maine and now you're back?
Well, for visiting.
Oh, you just so you moved to, where did you move to in Maine?
Bath, Maine, right outside of Portland.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. What are you doing with yourself these days?
Oh, working in a shipyard and apprenticing.
Okay, that's very cool.
Yes, it is.
And how's your brother?
He's doing good. He's a manager over at Boater's World in Smyrna Park.
Oh, good. And how's your dad?
He's doing good. He just had his shoulder operated on. What'd you say?
How's your mom's business?
Oh, Ella Hair Company's doing great. Hello?
Plug in there for Ella Hair.
Oh,
he cut me off when I said it. She said, how's your mom's business? And I said, Ella Hair Company.
Hello? Are you still there, Minnesota? Minnesota, are you still there?
I'm here.
Oh, all right. So how's the new school?
It's good. Scary, but I survived.
Well, that's good. We miss you.
I know. I miss you guys, too.
Well, that's good fact. Your Reaganite buddy, I've been going a few rounds with him the last couple of days.
Really?
I've been having a lot of fun with him.
Yeah. Yeah, and Conservapedia. Remember Brian found that?
I'm sorry, you're breaking up. Verizon should be put out of business. I do this over a cell phone because I don't have a landline here.
Mm-hmm. Conservapedia, do you remember Brian found that online?
Yes. Please don't use any last names.
Okay, I won't.
All right. But, oh, I'm so glad you could. What is it? It's about 7 o'clock out there in Minnesota, right?
Mm-hmm.
Central time.
8:30.
Oh, 8:30? Mm-hmm. Oh, you're only an hour behind us?
Yeah, an hour.
Oh, I thought you were 2 hours.
No, that's like, I don't know, would that be like Montana?
So so what are the lakes like?
Good. Good. It's been warm these past few days. Like, I think it got up to 36 today. And we didn't have school Monday or Tuesday.
You didn't have school because it got warm?
Well, because we had rain, and then at night it froze, and so in the mornings we thought
we'd
go out and
it
froze.
Oh, yeah. We had 2 days off. Not last week, because that was a whole week off because of D-Week, the week before.
Mm-hmm.
And, see, I figured somebody like you, you'd call up with some kind of reading from a guy like Steele from here in Maryland.
Yeah.
He's your new chairman.
Yeah.
Better your party than mine, I'll tell you that. He's not one of my... Oh, wait a minute here. Hold on. I got another call coming in. Go ahead, 916. You're back.
Hey, guy. How you doing?
Good, good. How are you?
Pretty good. Jesse Ventura, by the way.
Ventura, thanks very much. I couldn't think of I got a Minnesotan on the other line.
Well, you know, I mean, I know the libertarians, so what can I tell you? Yeah, how'd that convention go up there when the Republicans drifted into town?
He's talking to you, Alex.
Oh, it went well. And I think we had one of the guys, I don't remember his name, we had him over for dinner, remember when the Republican convention?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he came over to dinner at your house?
Yeah. It was
yeah,
one
we're
of the...
We're talking to a big-time young Republican here.
Oh, Jesus, okay. Well, I mean...
No, I mean a junior high-type Republican. Well, high
oh,
school
that
now.
Early. Holy God.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's a ninth grader, absolutely.
Oh,
and a former student, and I'm really happy that he called.
Well, I can sympathize. I'm still a registered Republican. I'm a libertarian conservative. No, when did I do that? It was in the 80s. I wanted to vote for Pat Buchanan, so.
You know. I am actually the wacko that I am. Did you hear any of my reading from Soul on Ice?
Oh, yes, I did, yeah.
So that
yeah,
was
I
a
didn't
lot
want
of fun.
Call, I didn't want to call Ben.
Right, no, I was afraid somebody was going to call. And,
yeah,
no,
when you're on the pulpit, you know, I'm on, you know.
Uh-oh, yeah, I was on the bully pulpit there, Alex. What I wanted to say something, and I can't remember. But now we've got. I haven't had my Canadian pal call in yet.
Oh yeah.
Are you
the Democrat
guy from Halifax, the Democratic communist? You'd love him, Alex.
I bet I would.
He makes Che Guevara look like a lefty. I mean, a righty.
Well, the. Only
hey, you know, let me ask you a question here. Have you done any big-time... Alex is a big-time Halo player.
Okay.
Have you done any big-time stuff lately?
Not lately, because I foolishly sold my Xbox because we lived out in the country, and my mom wasn't ready to get a T1 line just so I could play a video game. And so now I'm stuck with no Xbox. But I played a couple times.
Only a Republican would talk about getting a T1 line instead of just a broadband connection. You are hilarious.
Well, if you're going to play that game online, you need to...
I know. Well, and especially at Alex's level. I mean, he funds his computer habit with his Halo blade.
Every megabyte counts.
It's like backgammon used to fund the guy I know back in the old days.
Well, Norm, you're big on all the games, and that, of course, that one doesn't have much in the way of any historical value, I guess. Futuristic, though.
Well, Halo's kind of fun. What I'm really into, do you know, hey, Alex, do you know anything about alternate reality gaming? I think I started talking about that in class.
Oh, I've bought four of the game.
Oh, I'm becoming just fascinated with alternate reality gaming. It's just incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. I got another call coming in here. Hold on, guys.
Oh,
go ahead, 602. You're back.
Bill.
Go ahead. Hey, no last names, please.
Okay.
How are you, Bill?
All right. Alan was actually talking on my phone. I'm sorry we lost you, but it's great to hear you.
Oh, it's great to hear you. Oh, so he was at your house. That's great stuff.
Actually, we were down in Annapolis at the Federal House Restaurant.
No kidding. Hey, guess what? And I can make this announcement now, because it's now absolutely official. Norm from Norm at Night is now the official varsity girls soccer coach at the school he teaches at.
Oh, that's excellent. Excellent.
I am so excited. You have no idea.
Couldn't have been a better coach.
They play in the spring. And in fact, I was just talking with somebody today about a guy I know, and we often just threw around ideas, and we should have probably done it. Soccer in the Center Circle.
Soccer in the Center Circle. I'm still serious about that book, and I actually have the time to help you with that. So I am definitely serious about that. We should definitely write that book.
Should do it. Soccer in the Center Circle. It would be so much fun. So how's
I learned
the piano
all my
business?
Oh, good. Good. It's going great. I'm having fun teaching about 10 to 15 kids, and they're learning a lot. And also the math, I helped them out with solo ensembles. So that's going well.
Good.
Yeah, so it's fun. It's been fun. And actually, I'm going to Bethesda Chevy Chase Theater Friday for the first time. I'm going to be playing before the play and after their play up there to help people come into the bar and have fun. So we'll see how that goes this Friday night.
Well, I think that... Wow, are you playing by yourself?
No, I got a couple singers coming in. They're going to sing a little bit, and I'm going to play. And
where is that? Where is that?
It's up in Bethesda. It's the Bethesda Chevy Chase Theater. In fact, they had Altar Boys there. I guess it was some over the summer. They had
actually was not very long ago, because somebody offered me a ticket to go see it. You still there, 218?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Everybody jump into the conversation. Did you hear any of my Soul on Ice reading there, Bill?
Yeah, actually, I heard a little bit. Yeah, go ahead and talk some more about that, please.
Oh, I love Soul on Ice. I'm not going to I'm going to do a Black History reading every Tuesday during February.
Oh. That's great, because I did a little research on that. When it came up, and you know, the guy had a definitely interesting, colorful life.
Yes, he did.
So, and he became a born again Christian later on, and kind of renounced some of the earlier stuff that he did. But you know, he really
sure
had
you don't a, you don't mix him up with Stokely Carmichael.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that either.
I think you're Stokely Carmichael absolutely was a born again.
I don't think Malcolm converted at all. No.
Well, not Malcolm, Eldridge.
No, Eldridge Cleaver. It said it about Eldridge Cleaver. I'm serious. It said it because he's the one guy that went to prison, right? He went to prison
he was
and
open prison. He was a Black Panther founder.
Exactly, but later on, it was in the 80s. They said it right around the 80s is when he became a born again. But maybe I don't know. I could have got it confused, but I thought that's what they said.
Okay, well, no. You know what? You know what the best part about living in the 20th century or the 21st century is? It's real easy to find that out.
Yes.
I know that Eldridge Cleaver absolutely did. In fact, he moved. Eldridge Cleaver fled to what's that country where the crazy dick? Not Eldridge Cleaver. Stokely Carmichael. He went to the place. Oh, God, I can't think of I'm embarrassed. I should know this.
I'm thinking Libya.
Libya, that's it. He went there. Thank you very much, Miramar Gaddafi. And Stokely Carmichael went there, and then he was born again and came back, and I think he got arrested.
Hmm.
Well, they did some really horrible stuff in the 60s. But anyway, C-L-E-A-V-E-R. Actually, somebody sent me an email, wanted to know if I was going to do a reading from Ward Cleaver.
Oh.
I got a big kick out of that. I thought that was pretty funny. I may do a read a script from Leave it to Beaver next week.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite shows as a kid.
Absolutely.
A little bit different scenario there. But.
Yeah. So everybody in the family's good?
Doing good. Doing great. Can't complain. Ryan is down in Tampa, Florida. And,
right. Ryan friended me, and so we've sent some messages back and forth. That's really cool.
Yeah, he's probably going to be coming up for spring break too. So maybe we'll get together.
He had mentioned that would be fun to get together. That would be a lot of fun.
Yep, and last time he came up, he and Greg went out and had a great time. So
yeah, I'm sure they did.
Yeah. So anyway, how the girls doing? Okay.
Yeah. Karen's doing fine. She's working at some pharmacy in actually two or three different pharmacies in Annapolis. And going to school. Margaret is just, oh, my God. Eldridge, I didn't know this about Eldridge Cleaver, folks. He was, it's better than a born-again Christian. Eldridge Cleaver was baptized into the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
There you go. There you go.
Wow.
So, hey, if St. Paul can do it, he can do it.
I guess. I teach Sunday school every Sunday.
Do you?
I do. I'm having such great fun. He died in 1998.
Okay.
But a Mormon. Yeah. Wow.
I get them out here at least once a month, a couple kids with the white shirts and the black pants. You know, they have the uniform. They're always
they got to do their,
they got a mission for a year or 2 years. The calling.
You got any Mormons out there in Minnesota, Alex?
No, there's a Mormon across the street.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just trying to see. I'm still, now that I'm starting to get more than a single, I'm still figuring out how to work some of this stuff. But we're just having a great old time here with Norm at Night. And I'm so glad you called.
I listened to some of your blogs, too. They were awesome. I got it on my iTunes. So I'll check out some of the earlier shows, and it was just great talking to you, man.
Hey, it was great talking to you. Have a great time, and I'll talk to you later.
Okay, Norm. See you.
All right. Bye-bye. Hey, all you guests out there on the web chat, write me something. Don't just listen. Be great to hear you. I'm a little sad that I can't believe he became a Mormon. I should have checked that out. I should have known that, actually. Wow.
You know, I was going to suggest for your Black History, a lot of Malcolm X's kind of early, there's some essays he did out of his childhood that are just exceptional.
And, well, maybe I will.
And they're not terribly political. You know, they do history, but they're very cleanly and honestly written. And I, of all his work, I think I'm impressed with that the most. So.
The autobiography was great stuff. But that's interesting. So, so you miss us, Alex, huh?
Yeah.
Well, we miss you too.
How is HTML?
Oh, HTML is wonderful.
Yeah.
And actually, we're doing a lot of interesting stuff, and we're actually putting together some student groups to make videos for the website and stuff, and you would have been a big help in that.
Yeah, too bad they put me in public speaking.
Well, I don't even want to talk about that.
Yeah.
Might still be here if they hadn't done that.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Anyway, I'm glad things. So, one thing I wanted to know about the bridge. Did other people's bridges hold up more than yours?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
They went up to like 15 kilograms. What is it? Yeah.
And when did yours collapse?
1.5.
Oh.
So.
Okay, well. Did you spend any time on it?
Well, see, here's the thing. The girl across the street from me spent, like, maybe 10 hours on her bridge. And she's just trash-talking my bridge for, like, days and days. And she's like, oh, it's not even worth it to bring it in. And then we got the same grade, and she's so angry.
So what did they do? Put all the bridges out there and just start putting weight on them and then they collapse?
Yeah, they put like a board and then there's a basket and they add these little metal weights.
Oh, well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Bridges. You guys in Minnesota, you have trouble with bridges out there, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I shouldn't joke about that.
I thought that was the bridge you were talking about in the beginning.
No, they made, was it toothpicks?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's toothpicks.
Oh, I can't wait to tell. Well, I got to be careful, though. I can't tell too many people about this show because I say things they might not like at school. But anyway... it will be fine. I'm very proud of the show. And I had a bunch of callers. Wow, that was really cool. I was hoping the Ward Cleaver call would come in. I just got such a kick out of that. I'm going to do a reading from Ward Cleaver. That was in my emails today.
Hmm.
That was a kick. But, you know what? Even though we've had plenty of callers tonight, I have to at least have a couple bars of this. So just hold on with me, callers. Bear with me.
Why does no one call? Why can't somebody just give me a ring? The stupid telephone is silent like a stone, and I feel all alone. Why does no one call?
Oh, nothing like a little Max Randy to perk up the night.
Oh, that, you know, that reminds me. I found a couple of MP3s or a bunch of old commercials from Buffalo Radio.
Really?
And they're all, like, linked together. There's Utica Club and Simon Pure and there's Topps Market and the Chamber of Commerce Boost Buffalo.
Please tell me there's a Mighty Taco.
No, there's no Mighty Taco in there. But
my favorite one was.
I've got them saved as MP3s. I'll send those off to you.
Oh, that would be great. But my favorite, we want your money at the taco. Oh, I can't even remember it.
Oh, I used to know their commercials by heart. I don't think
I know you used to sing them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And what I don't understand on my switchboard here, your call has got a hand on it with a red arrow.
Oh. Oh, maybe because I'm a host. I'm not a host with you, but I'm a host. Actually, last night I tried my first test. I did like a test show for like an hour and played around with the system to figure out because I wanted to work on Skype. And I think I figured out a way to do it. So it's a little bit convoluted, but
it's supposed to work with Skype.
Skype.
But I don't have the Skype. I just have computer Skype.
Oh, okay.
You Skype out there, Minnesota?
No, we don't Skype that much.
Oh, do you have Skype on your computer? Oh, you're an Apple guy. You're an Apple guy too, right, Carl?
Oh, I was. I still have an old Power Mac hanging around here. You know, I keep it. I've still got they were good machines. That right now, there's really, unless you enjoy the software, there's no reason to have one. You know.
I actually switched to a Windows. You can run Windows on a Mac, and I had to for my eBay business.
Wait, Alex.
Yeah.
I to understand this. You're on a PC now?
Oh, well, it's Mac, but it's a PC.
I was so worried. I bid on two items on eBay, and because I got all these old not the mini DV tapes, but the next size. The 8mm, but they were digital before they dropped and my camera doesn't work anymore. And I wanted but I need something to play them in. And I bid on these two cameras, but I didn't realize that they didn't play digital 8 tapes. They only played 8mm. And I was deleting bids for quite a while.
You can cancel your bids.
You can withdraw a bid?
Yeah.
Oh, how do you do that?
Well, I'll send you a link to it. You go into, like, the help, and then you say, retract bid or something, and then there's a page
pull
out. Yeah.
No, that's all right. Well, I got about 6 minutes remaining, guys, and it's been great, but I'm going to tell you good night, Minnesota.
Okay, good night.
And it was great. Listen to my closing songs.
Okay.
But we'll call again. Okay. I've never kicked anybody off before. That was fun. I wanted to see how you do that.
Oh, I think, there's just a little thing you click on. It's...
right.
Yeah, I guess I actually got kicked off one show last night, in fact.
Oh, you've been calling other shows?
No, I got kicked off this other show. It was a kind of a redneck conservative show, and I wasn't conservative enough, and boom.
Oh, my. Well, wait a minute. I'm getting messages here. Oh, but that's Facebook. Okay. Oh, I got so many things open here on my computer.
I think so. I would just stick with the, there's the, if they go right to the site, there's a click to talk. You know, if they have a microphone and headphones.
Wait a minute. Love my freedom. What's this fair tax stuff? whenever anybody talks about fair taxes, and it, yeah, I admit I write left-handed, but whenever anybody starts talking about fair taxes, the only fair way you think is if the poor people pay all the taxes and the rich people. Come on, Love My Freedom. Talk to me about fair tax. Give us a call here, 347-945-6713, and you can have the last 5 minutes to tell us all about the fair tax.
Well, let's face it, property owners pay
a tax. Wait a minute. Oh, I had a 716 caller calling in.
Grab him.
Oh, I lost him. 716 caller, call back. Oh, I was, Love My Freedom got me all fired up. But the 716 caller, give me a call back here. And any of my cousins that are out there, oh, wait, here we go. Hold on. Go ahead, 716, you're on Norm at Night.
Hello, is the room at the inn in Bowie for me on Thursday and Friday?
Oh, there surely is. Absolutely, we're looking forward to it. I won't be home till Friday, though.
Yeah, I can't wait. I get in Thursday.
How are you?
What?
Oh, I'm so glad you got on. We've had a big night tonight.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, did you hear my Eldridge Cleaver reading?
No, I wasn't on yet.
Oh, well, you could get the, whatchamajigger, the archive tomorrow.
Oh, I'll do that.
Well, it would be fun. Have some more of your Boston guys. Oh, gosh, I can't remember. I got
what?
It at home. I wanted to ask you about a pub in Boston, if you've ever been there.
Oh, yeah?
It's where my friend Patsy Whalen plays.
Ah, you don't remember at all the name of it?
Oh, wait, just give me a second here. Mr. Dooley.
Nope, never been there. But
oh, I got another call coming in. Stay right there. Go ahead, 843. You're on Norm at Night.
How does the fair tax tax the poor?
Because fair, it always seems to me that fair taxes is everybody pays the same amount, except there's a whole lot more poor people than there are rich people. And so the poor people end up paying a way greater proportion of the tax than the rich people do.
That's the but with proportion. The rebate tied into the fair tax, they get all their money back every month that they would pay in taxes. So they completely untaxes the poor. It's the only tax system out here today under consideration that completely untaxes the poor.
Well, I'll tell you what. Email me buffnet@verizon.net. All the information, and I will investigate it, and I'll be glad to talk about it next week.
Very good. Very good.
I would love
I
that,
am,
and
I'm a Democrat. I'm a strong Democrat, and there are a lot of Democrats for this, but with George Bush having been the president, no way was we giving him the credit of fixing this tax mess this country has right now. But now that we have a good, strong Democrat in there, it's time to get on this problem, and let's get it fixed for all the people for good.
Okay, well, that'll be great. Send me, I'm so glad you called, and send me the information, and then I'll be, because I really don't know a whole bunch about it. I may be getting, I'm getting it mixed up with flat tax.
Flat tax taxes the poor.
Yes, absolutely, and I fully admit that I had it mixed up with the flat tax. I would love to know more about your tax. Just let me know because I've been
Give
a Democrat.
Give me your email address on the chat line, okay?
Right.
I'm not sitting at my computer now. I came outside so I wouldn't get feedback.
Okay,
Give me your
no,
email
that's...
address. And I have a fair tax education show that's on this Blog Talk Radio, 6 p.m. every Thursday night, Eastern Standard Time.
Okay, well, I'll be sure to tune in Thursday night.
So, and if you are interested in it, I would love to guest on your show one night.
Okay, well, I'll try to call in on Thursday night and on your show, and we'll talk about that.
Very good.
Yeah, outstanding.
Okay, Norm, I will see you Thursday night.
Thursday night, 6 p.m. Eastern?
Eastern.
Okay.
I've got a question for your caller. If he wants to promote, you know, his fair tax, I blog on the Motley Fool.
Uh-huh.
And it's very easy for you to set up an account over there and set up a blog. And you'll find, it's a terrific resource.
Okay, everybody is on the line here. The show's still on, and we're still going to archive, but we're not streaming anymore. Just so everybody knows, it'll still be in tomorrow's archive, though. Actually, about 2 hours from now, the archive will go on. But we've had a great night here. The only thing I don't like about, so 6 o'clock Thursday, the Fair Tax Show. I'll find it on the Blog Talk thing, too.
It's blogtalkradio.com, / Love My Freedom.
Love My Freedom. You got it.
Okay.
And have we friended each other on Blog Talk Radio?
Do what now?
Have we friended each other, Love My Freedom?
No, we haven't yet. No, we haven't.
Let's take care of that, too. That will be great. Do you Skype?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. That's fine. Well, that'll be great, and I'm having a great...